This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast. I'm Pete, and oh my God, I'm with the birthday boy himself, Johnny Sorrow. Johnny, I said it on social media already, and I'll say it personally. Happy birthday, and how you doing, man?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. I apologize to the people who do listen to this show. You're getting me in full celebratory mode. That's code. You got it.
Take it how you want to take it.
Yeah. I'm full of cake. I'm wearing a pointy hat.
Big 4'7".
Yes, 47.
Damn.
47. That's... just like Jackie Robinson, right? Is that 47? and showing how old I am because I'm making a reference to Jackie Robinson.
There you go. And hey, on your 47th birthday, do you go to the doctor for precautions and stuff?
No. I should. They always amazed how quite nimble I am for an old man my size.
That's impressive. Oh man. Well, again, happy birthday. But hey, let's get right into this. And we open up with midgets on Johnny's birthday.
Yes, on my birthday.
And we get Lord Littlebrook versus Cowboy Lang, July 11th, 1986. What were your thoughts here?
Okay, so we've been seeing all these midget wrestlers that have been revelations to us. With Ivan, of course, Tiny Tom. We've seen a lot through this footage and other stuff we've watched. Mainly this
one. Little Tokyo.
He's known, but I'm talking about these ones where, never heard of him, or you're seeing younger versions of people, and then you see it's Lord Littlebrook versus Cowboy Lang, and these are the guys who held down everyone on that midget circuit. Totally. These were the stars. Littlebrook ran that circuit, and Cowboy Lang was right number two in that circuit. And so that's why you never heard of Ivan the Terrible. And then they go out and they have a pretty enjoyable match. 18 minutes. I saw that. I was like, this match is going to go 18 minutes? And I thought of something I've never thought of before, that Cowboy Lang is a cowboy. What ranch has midget cowboys at all? I mean, is he right? He's not bucking broncos. What does he do at the ranch? I'm questioning his cowboy credentials. I'm sorry. I know you're from Texas.
Cook.
he's Cookie.
Yeah.
He's the Cookie. Fantastic. And Littlebrook looks like just a hippie cult lord.
Yeah.
With a pot belly. But he's in a lot better shape than we're used to seeing him, because this is older footage. But we got a very young Jim Ross on commentary with Paul Bosch, which leads to a dynamic of who's in charge that I can't really describe. But
well, you got to remember, Bosch only had one microphone, so he was the one controlling it. Oh. So the only time he would let Jim talk was when he'd give him the
mic. Oh, that's right.
Put the mic in front of him, yeah.
But that's right. But that's how he taught him what he wanted him to say. Because I guess as soon as Jim Ross said something that he was just like, he'd flip it back to him and kind of correct him. And then you got JR, to his credit, pretty quickly gets it, and then it becomes more fluid.
Yeah.
There's like a few times where he's kind of like, well, I'm going to out-talk the old man. No, you're not. Not if I'm controlling the fucking microphone. You're not. And And then they got a lot of fun. They're talking about 740 on the dial. Basically, JR realizes how to feed Paul lines. Because he starts feeding him lines, and Paul's responding. So it's very interesting. I can't go into all of it, but that aspect of it is interesting to see how that evolves.
It's actually kind of a template for how Jim Ross would be politically. You know, I mean, the guy survived wrestling for how many years, and he moved up in the ranks, so he kind of probably knew how. I mean, just watching doing this with Paul Bosch, how political it was on doing commentary with him. He took all those stuff he learned probably there and spun it in a direction, in a different field, in a way, you know?
At its core, it's the same thing. It's the same skill to go, what am I going to do to make this man happy who's in charge? And to the best of my ability, I'm going to do that. And that's how you guarantee success in this business. Whether or not you end up stepping on a few toes or not is... it's going to happen, but that's a skill.
Yeah, think about it.
He worked a very young version of it.
Yeah, he worked for two of the hardest guys probably to get along with in wrestling. From you hear the stories between Bill Watts and Vince McMahon.
You'd hear some story about Jim Ross being cranky and shit and bullshit. I was like, if you're basically a good dude and you've been brought up in this business by those two guys, you know, very successful and hard-nosed about everything. Yeah, I might be a little cranky, too, about going to work.
Yep.
Jesus.
Any more thoughts on the match?
No, I just thought they had a really good match. They got it, some midget, you know, hijinks and some very decent wrestling, given their age. Because it was like, oh, they're younger. They're showing why they're on top, I guess.
Yeah, you kind of liked it more than me. I mean, it felt kind of, felt more formula, where they were doing a lot more midget tropes.
That's just it. I think that's what I meant, was there's all the tropes, but they're very good at those tropes at this point, and that's what the people come to see, and that's part of them on top. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and some of the stuff I really liked in the match, I liked in the background you see Littlebrook pantomiming to some fat person in the audience.
Oh yeah,
that was funny. With the stomach, I enjoyed that. I liked Littlebrook using his knee as a big weapon, Lang wrapping Littlebrook in the ropes. I thought that was a pretty fun spot. But again, a lot of this stuff, besides some of those stuff, there's a lot of formula, and there was nothing wrong with the formula. I mean, it's been successful for midgets for however long they've been working, and to this day they still do these same spots. So, again, it was just a lot more formula.
Yeah, but I just thought of one thing. Was it JR joking around, or was it Paul? It must have been Paul, who said, while they were all running around doing their shtick, he said, it looks like the trampoline at the boys' club.
Yeah, I think that was, I'm pretty sure that was Paul.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. That's quite a reference. I didn't know that. I would have gone to the boys' club if I knew they had a trampoline.
Yeah. And then we got, of course, we got some of the Pauls of don't adjust your sets. Don't squint. These men are these size. You know, we got that Paul Bosch tropes to go with a formula match. So there we go. But then we get the Fantastics versus Eddie Gilbert and Sting from August 8th, 1986. We've seen these matches. I think this is the third or fourth match we've gotten from these guys.
It's the third I can remember.
Okay. And I know they've, I mean, I know they worked, I mean, they worked all over, you know, Mid-South together. And so these guys are having good matches, man. Mm-hmm. Right here, we get a pretty quick fight from the start. The crowd's hot. It settles down. Then Gilbert and Fulton have another huge punch exchange. Then Sting and Fulton have one. Tommy Rogers is in, and Sting eats a couple of big drop kicks from Tommy Rogers. And Gilbert and Rogers pair off, and Rogers working the arm. Tommy's in and biting Gilbert's nose, which he sells big. Sting and Eddie getting the heat. Loving how Gilbert places Sting in the ring to cheat behind the ref's back. It was pretty much, we always refer to Flair and the broomstick. This is Eddie and Sting's the Broomstick, where Eddie's putting Sting wherever he wants to put him so he can cheat behind his back and using Sting. And Sting doesn't quite, you know, he's green. He doesn't quite have the timing here, but Eddie is just grabbing him and putting him in the positions in the ring to allow him to cheat, which is pretty interesting. A hot tag, and Tommy's running wild. It's out of control. The heels are DQ'd. And then post-match, we get a wild brawl, which sets up, you know, obviously more rematches between these guys. Really fun match in the 3.25-star range. And it's interesting, again, seeing the evolution of Sting, because, you know, the like we talked about it last time, I mean, the Fantastic really have a huge, huge, along with Eddie Gilbert, in really developing of Sting here, you know?
Yeah.
This is really the beginning of Sting learning how to work, where we see him finally, the light bulb finally going on for the guy, as opposed to everyone talks about the Clash of Championship match with Flair, as like, that was his, like, his college graduation. Here, this is his, like, his college courses, his electives, learning to work.
This is fucking high school, is what it is.
Yeah.
And like a high school in a very, like, you're in a very rough fucking high school too. And Sting, you know, should count as blessings that he's in that ring with those three guys. Cause whether or not how they felt about him doesn't fucking matter. He's, you know, Bill Watts is telling them, make him fucking look good out there. And Sting had, but working for Bill Watts, he had to keep up his end of the bargain and show some fucking potential.
Well, on a note there, Eddie Gilbert was one of the first people ever to say he thought Sting was returning
into
a great worker. Yeah. So Sting had Eddie had a personal stake in Sting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can see that. Yeah. Yeah, you can see that here. I wrote down, all I can think about Eddie Gilbert in this match is Eddie Gilbert ruled at this shit.
Yeah.
This guy was orchestrating not just Sting. He was orchestrating the whole goddamn match. And you got the Fantastics, who are amazing and so good. But, you know, heel calls a match and Eddie Gilbert is just, he's out there with a fucking magic wand. Making this, and it is awesome. I mean, you said it starts that fucking great fight. No sharp dressed man here.
Yeah,
they just want to fucking fight. And when Eddie, when it goes Memphis with Eddie and Bobby Fulton just slugging each other, it's Memphis style punch fest taken to an artwork level. Of masters at it, and it was so good. Oh, I just was like, God damn, this rules. There's some Eddie fans in that audience too. Like, I guess people who were just like us going, oh, Eddie, he's amazing.
Right.
When the bell's ringing and it's chaos, and I was like, man, Sting was showing that he had what it took. I thought, you know, as green as he is here, he's, you know, you could be pulled into place and everything, but the stuff he's supposed to show, like the menace and all that stuff, and the connection with the crowd, he's got that. And he's doing that while being carried through this match by three experts. I really enjoyed this as a match and as something I don't normally do. Which is watch it, you know, from that point of view.
Yeah.
From that art point of view, but I just found myself doing it, and it's an amazing performance by Eddie Gilbert and the Fantastics.
Totally agree. And that leads us to another Fantastics match, and that's the freaking Fantastics versus the Sheep Herders. June 27, 1986. This is a complete the blow off of their feud in UWF Houston.
Really?
Yeah, this is the blow off in Houston anyway.
Oh, okay.
But obviously this is right around the horn. They're probably doing this feud right around, and this is a New Zealand boot camp match. And Johnny, why don't you start on this?
Well, I wanted to ask you first, cuz I had always assumed that the that fucking insane amazing wooden barbed wire cage six man was the blow off of that feud.
That was before this.
That was really, that was before this.
Yeah, they were doing the six mans, and then actually in May, they had the Fantastics versus Sheep Herders had a regular tag match in a barbed wire, which was on the night of the UWF tournament. And then this was the Sheep Herders' final showing in Houston.
Wow, that's amazing that match was one of the matches leading to the end of this amazing feud This feud was one of the last things that I loved in professional wrestling before I started not watching it anymore when I was around 17. But I remember this and being like, I remember making people watch that fucking cage match. You know, it was me and my buddy. It was me and Wolfman and two chicks at my house. Here's how suave we were. We made them sit through that and then tried to break up to go make out. Yeah, it wasn't a successful evening. But holy shit, we watched that fucking live on television. Oh, holy fuck, we did. It was worth it. Well, at least for me it was. I was like, yeah, no, she's okay. But yeah, this was. Please, you go ahead. Okay. Let me get my composure. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the Fantastics are coming out. We're getting Sharp Dressed Man, and the Sheep Herders attack before the bell. It's like a brawl right on from Jump Street, and it's a New Zealand boot camp match. So the rules here is it's Texas Tornado, anything goes, no disqualification. So it's not even a tag. It's just full of chaos, full of danger and wildness. Loved when the Sheep Herders went for a chair in the crowd, and the crowd wouldn't give it to them. Can you imagine that? The crowd wanted to protect their baby faces, so they're not giving the chairs to the dastardly heel. Nowadays, fuck, a heel goes, give me a chair, they'll get 20 of them from the fucking crowd.
Nowadays, I'm from Philly. I'm a Philly fan. We were doing that shit back then.
Okay, well, Philly, yeah, but
these kids today.
But I mean, it was fantastic. It was just a great little neat little thing how the fans wanted to protect their baby faces. Yeah, the Fantastics. Bobby Fulton especially is bloody as hell. Fulton is bleeding like a motherfucker. One Sheep Herder, because I can't tell him apart, is using a rope. Other is using a wooden fork. It's been all Sheep Herders just kicking the living shit out of the Fantastics. This is a total bloodbath. A USA chant breaks, but the beatdown just shuts the freaking crowd down. They're just in awe of what the Sheep Herders are fucking doing right now.
Dude, that fork was like, it was wooden and the size of like a salad, an Italian salad fork, but shaved into a fork so the people in the cheap seats could see this giant fork.
This thing was gigantic. And, finally, the Fantastic starts to come back. And what do they start to come back with? Well, it looks like a policeman's nightstick. Uh-huh. But oh no, they're cut off already. And Fulton is still a bloody freaking mess. I think this is the total Fulton showcase.
Hey, you know who he got the fucking club from?
Oh, Officer McCool.
Yeah, of course, Officer McCool got. He was there.
He's like, Bobby, here.
No, he slipped it very surreptitiously and cool like a motherfucker because he was watching some crime go down and he wasn't having it because he's a rebel, that McCulloch is.
But this is like the Fulton showcase. You were talking about him earlier with the Memphis background, and this is his Memphis pedigree is really showing off here. And I think he was the one who really carried the Fantastics in this feud with the Sheep Herders, because this is more brawling, which is his cantina. I mean, not that Tommy Rogers was bad at it, because he wasn't.
No.
It was just Fulton was total Memphis on it. And boy, and finally they're making the comeback. But Fulton really has been the glue to these type of brawls. Boy, though, the Fantastics gave a great comeback. Tons of freaking revenge spots. They're showing tons of fire after having their asses handed to them. Super stiff brawl and a great blow off to the feud. 4 stars, a gore fest. If you're a blood blood mark, this is for you. Mm-hmm. You like stiff brawling, this is for you. This had total had a total Puerto Rico feel to it with the brawls. Like the sheep herders would do this a lot over in Puerto Rico, and it was just ghastly. Awesome. It was a great way to blow this feud off. What do you think?
I've already talked. I just got just a couple of little things. Some chick yelled faggot at the sheep herders. I was like, yeah, she's got homophobia perception. That's you know. And you described everything, so I'm just making a few comments. And I've already said how much I love this feud. And I always hate it when people, I saw the one thing from the one show. The feud doesn't live up to all the hype. And I'm like, yeah, it does. You watched one. You know, watched all the stuff we've watched. It does live up. This match rules. Because it bases itself on one of my favorite things about pro wrestling is using a foreign country as an enemy, as a heel, who are our ally. And there's no reason that we should be feuding, and we never have. We've never had a problem with New Zealand, and well, maybe not until recently, but and they never had a problem with us. So, you know, the Canada USA feuds and some of the other ones. It's always a safe way to do the patriotic stuff without thinking you're really going to offend anybody.
Yeah,
and you know, because you can tap into that emotion with the evil New Zealanders, you know. But so if you're going to be the evil New Zealanders, you better be fucking evil.
Yeah.
And they are.
They amped it, yep.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, I fell in love with the sheep herders from the magazines, especially the Napolitano magazines, as we talked about, like your tour guide. I mean, they love Puerto Rico, to your point, because they were also the only magazines that when they listed who the world champions were, there were four. Carlos Colon was one of their champions because a lot of the Hispanic audience bought the Napolitano mags. And Carlos Colon was up there with Flair, Martel, and Hogan. That was the ones I first saw. And the Sheepherders were always on those covers because they were so gory, like you said.
Yeah.
And this match lives up to those covers. It's great.
Oh, yeah, it really was, man. On that note, after this great brawl, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back with going from one stipulation match to another stipulation match. Gotta love Houston. And we get Chavo Guerrero versus Steve Kearns. This is an offshoot of the Fabulous Ones versus the Guerreros feud. And this is the loser gets painted yellow, a stip I love. And this match this match made the Death Valley Driver set, but I believe it was an edited form. And here we get the full match. And I enjoyed it.
Me too.
I mean, you want to go, John?
Oh, yeah. So, loser painted yellow. It's such an amazingly ridiculous gimmick, but it's awesome because it just lends itself to wrestling. You're yellow, you know, and the over-the-topness of it, but it still, like, strikes at manhood. And it's also it's a lights-out match. So they did. It's a loser painted yellow lights out match, and what they're doing is on so many cards. Remember when those WWF cards of the early 80s, where instead of a tag match, they'd have Jim Neidhart wrestle Jim Brunzell, and Bret Hart would wrestle B. Brian Blair. Then they did that all the time, and it didn't mean anything. And this, like, well, we're going to split these. Let's put two big, great gimmicks on it and make you care instead of seeing, like, well, I'd rather see the tag, you know, but oh, no, that's cool. And they do a great, great job. You got someone out there yelling, Chavo, give it all you got. You know, his guidance counselor's there, apparently. You know?
His anger management teacher's there.
No, you give it all you got. You know, no, a good guidance counselor wants you to try and succeed. You know, I didn't have one. I don't know anyone who did. I just thought they really had an awesome match. Chavo was bringing the babyface fire. Kieran was a fucking asshole, but he's also tough as fuck. Don't underestimate, you know, the dude in the sexy little tights. He's going to fuck you up if he gets a chance. And then it ends, gets all, you know, schmozzed at the end of these cheating motherfucking fantastics, and I love it. Because Chavo gets the win, right? And but before he could paint him yellow, Lane comes in, and they fucking lay him out and dump the paint all over him like a sucker, and they run away. And somewhere, me and Wolfman would be cheering for the Fabs here.
Yeah, so. It was a great heat-generating finish.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, this is from January 31st, 1986. I love the gimmick. I love the stips. Early on, we get the fists are flying. We get a big punch exchange. Chavo wins both punch exchanges. I like that. But then I thought, like, Steve Kern was absolutely fabulous in this match. No pun intended. Chavo.
Oh, really?
I enjoyed him here at the very beginning. But then he starts working the leg early, which I normally would have no problem with. But to me, this is kind of like a really, it has this added stip. So, and these guys are doing a blood feud right now. So him starting to work the leg felt a little too scientific for me. Even though, I mean, some of the stuff was cool. Like, I really enjoyed him kicking the hamstring, doing hamstring kicks into a, and then he goes into an Indian deathlock, and all the work is good. But again, it should be a little bit more nasty, you know, for this type of stip.
He's toying with his prey, Pete.
Yeah, well, Kern makes the ropes. Chavo continuing to shine, gives a knee to the back. And then Kern takes over with an eye rake to set up the heat. And Kern starts biting the forehead. He's opening up a cut. Now Kern is punching the cut, boot scraping it for good measure. Chavo's trying to fight back, like the revenge spot from trying to bust open Kern. A Bret Hart turnbuckle bump, which I love, literally like the finish, bump into a Chavo Guerrero German suplex for the win. Then the Fabs attack Chavo post-match, cover him in yellow. Love that heat angle, super heated. I thought the match was a tad more technical than it should have been, but still a good match in the 3-star range. I thought you can see how pissed Chavo was about getting the paint. Not only has he got painted yellow, but they got it in his mouth. and you see him spitting it out, complaining the ref that the paint's in his mouth and stuff.
Okay, so, think about it this way, Pete. You know, and this is me on my birthday defending the scientific moves in a hardcore match, but it's a lights out match. And at this point in professional wrestling, I'm going to get all, you know, crazy old man here. You know what was the most knockout moves in wrestling? Wrestling moves. Not your steel chairs and your nonsense. Wrestling moves. And that would knock a guy out, and then you could paint him yellow. Good.
Okay, I can see your bullshit psychology there, but I thought Kern was dialing it up to a 10. Chavo was at a 7. If that makes any sense.
Oh no, Kern here showed that how good he is. You know, there's a reason why he was as basically very successful as he was in his career as a performer and a trainer.
So. Yeah. I mean, he understood psychology. And I'm not to knock that Chavo did it. It just felt like he just needed to amp it up a little, kind of like Bobby Fulton did here in the feud with the Sheep Herders earlier. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I felt like Chavo didn't. I mean, and a lot of times those baby faces didn't. They were stoic baby faces where they didn't, you know, they didn't cheat and stuff. But, we know Chavo has that dark side, so we've seen it.
It takes something like winning the match and having that yellow paint all over you to turn you to the dark side.
But he's already there before, so I mean.
To bring it back, so if that leads to their next thing being like, let's say, some cage match, you know, then I'm like, oh, you know, you pissed me off to the point of that. That's Houston Bill Watts booking. So
that's true. All right, but, I mean, it's not like I hated the match, Johnny, so...
No, I know. You got to see Stan Lane, and apparently in his American flag underwear. I mean, yeah, what more do you want?
I know, exactly. But for all you ladies out there...
Oh, the ladies? I saluted.
There you go. He started singing the Happy Birthday song like Marilyn Monroe to it.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Hey,
Mr. Fabulous.
Yeah, there you go.
He's truly a fabulous one.
That leads us to this pretty hot six-man. Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh,
Steve
yeah.
Williams. The Big Cheese himself, Ted DiBiase.
The Big Cheese.
First Buzz Sawyer. Dick Murdoch and Mass Superstar from the same date. This is a loaded fucking card.
Holy shit.
And what you make of this, man?
Well, number one, all these matches are from the same date.
The Chavo match, this match, and then the main event would do it.
Oh, I was thinking you were just comparing Chavo to Bobby Fulton. I was like, they are both on the same show, dude. I mean, come on, that's Bobby Fulton's a hard act to follow.
They weren't on the same show.
They weren't, so. Okay.
But they were still in a blood feud, so that was the example.
But this six-man, I wrote that. Are you going to go first?
I'll let you go first.
Okay. This six-man, number one, it's... like the ultimate, if you're a fan of Mid-South wrestling from this time period, like, this is right when I got in, and you already were. This is like the dream fanfic six man of characters who are on top. Your good guys, somehow or another, now have somehow become Duggan, Doc, and DiBiase, who just a few years ago were villains, all, and now they are the top fucking baby faces. And there's a new breed of bad guys in the town. So the old bad guys who now have gone good are facing off against these old bad guys. And there's personal connections.
Oh, yeah. Duggan and DiBiase were in a blood feud just the year prior.
Yeah.
Dick Murdoch was DiBiase's protege. Buzz Sawyer and Duggan are right now in a blood feud. Buzz and Dick and Murdoch and Mass Superstar feuding with Doc and DiBiase right now.
Superstar is more of a like, he doesn't really care about shit. He's like a paid assassin type of thing. Or he's just there for business. You know, because he doesn't give a fuck about all your people's problems. I came down here to fucking win the championship and do business. And he's that kind of villain. And that was his character. For a guy in a mask, he was very soft-spoken and matter of fact that he's going to kick your ass.
I wouldn't say soft spoken, but.
Well, no, he could. Yeah, well, yeah. I'm not talking about Demolition. I'm talking about Mass Superstar.
Well, Mass Superstar. So, I mean, he was more calculating.
Calculating. That's the word I'm looking for. But then the whole who do you trust thing.
Yeah.
Between, because Duggan's looking across the ring at Dick Murdoch, and Murdoch's like, hey, we don't have any problem, right? We're good, you know? And Duggan's looking at him like he's a friend and maybe a mentor of some way, and he's pointing at DiBiase. He's like, him? Really? Him? What he's done to you? And they play this for a while, and if you know the history, it's fascinating.
It really
it's
is.
So good. And they're taking their time with it to where some people nowadays would be like, boy, they're just playing this out. Yes, they are, because they're raising that crowd up and up and up.
Yeah, it's called milking the moment and making the most of the moment. Yeah.
But it's also this. It's also to give the people who understand what's going on a chance to look at their friend or whatever who doesn't and go, oh, this means this. And then they go, oh, shit. And that's why it exponentially keeps exploding, along with their amazing pantomime and shit. And then it leads to a sort of a trust thing. And as soon as he can, Dick Murdoch tries to fuck him. And Duggan ain't falling for it. Boom. And it all falls apart. And it was Dick Murdoch just building a tower of cards. And it all comes falling apart. And it's brilliant work. It's my favorite fucking thing I've seen on this. This footage. I'm gonna let you finish. Oh no, I'm talking about this footage. Just that Dick Murdoch is a genius.
Yeah.
So everyone was always like, "Well, he just played to the crowd and did goofy shit." Yeah, maybe sometimes he also did this. So
yeah, and it goes back to timing again because they timed it and they built it to a crescendo. It's kind of like a great chef where he knows exactly when to take the whatever off the you know, right when he has his
right.
Play ready to go, or his sauce has finally hit that perfect boiling point where it needs to come off. This is kind of exactly how they built to that, and it really was percolating.
It got me so worked up talking about it just now. I lost my fucking marbles like a dummy and forgot my notes. The announcer was having a great time with when he hit the big cheese and people pop for the big cheese, and then that reminds the crowd of the Rat Pack, and therefore gives the idea in their head that they can play on with Duggan, because, oh, he was in that.
Yep.
It was the Rat Pack. And at the end, the Rat Pack is standing tall over the bag. Oh, fucking great.
Yeah, this is just great. Again, they're meshing some of their top views in the promotion, and with, one of my favorite sayings in umbrella story fashion.
Big time.
Yep.
Huge.
Yep. They're calling this a tag team war. So the bar is raised with that build.
A tag team war.
Yeah. The ref's trying to maintain order. I love Murdoch teasing the friendship with Duggan. I mean, it's so layered, and then it means so much on just a couple of looks, a couple of fake handshakes, a couple he's kind of like trying to convince Duggan to come to the dark side under the forge of friendship. And
it's Duggan, and Duggan is giving, for a guy like Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who gets the, everyone goes, oh, the hoe, tongue out and shit. This is a bravura performance by Hacksaw of nuance. And because they're playing on him going, you and I, we'll just wrestle, you and I.
Yeah.
I know we're on the opposite side, but you and I, we're just going to wrestle. And I can't believe you trusted him. Don't listen to him. He fucked you over. I never fucked you over. I'm your friend.
Yeah.
And they build
the moment, and the crowd gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And it's almost like that helium blowing up in that balloon. Is it going to pop? And they finally dug in and Murdoch finally locked up. Duggan strikes, buzzes in, and it's on. Pier 6 brawl. Now, folks, it's out of control. Babyface standing tall as they clear the ring. Duggan and Murdoch are back at it. Teddy now getting a piece of Murdoch. I rake by Murdoch. Faces turn the tide. Nothing the heels can do to stop the momentum. The heels sucker Doc into the corner, but his strength is too much to handle. Eventually cut off Ted. They had a really strong, long shine segment here. Finally, they cut off Ted and work his neck, which goes back to Georgia, which goes back to future feud with the Freebirds. It goes, goes back to Murdoch, her working over his neck in their feud, in their short-lived feud. This was hurt in the Murdoch angle, the neck, and in the pass against the Freebirds, we get a chair shot for a shitty finish. But the crowd, he was tremendous. Really strong 3.5-star match. I wish they gave him another 5 minutes. I think it would have taken it to another level. And then they still had 18 minutes. So, I mean, it's not like they didn't get time. I just loved it. I mean, they just built it and built it. And they got the most. The thing is, they got the most out of everything, you know. There was no wasted movement. Nothing was wasted. And it was just awesome.
This was old fashioned go.
Yeah.
Basically. Cause you have Pete going, you know, go, it could have been, you know, it could have had a few more minutes on it. It was 18. No, nowadays that's such a statement from us.
Yeah.
That's great.
Why don't we take a break here and we'll get back with the main event of Jake the Snake versus Steve Snake.
Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. This Week in Wrestling. Stacey and Elliot's Bogus Journey. The Super Apoitas Podcast. The Military Industrial Suplex. Strong Style History. Puro Puri. And Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back. And again, we're still in January 31st, 1986. And this is the famous match that Ken Hoffman and the Houston Chronicle reported the finish of because Jake was leaving the area and headed to the WWF. Now, Johnny, you got the Mid-South DVD, right?
The WWF one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in forever.
Okay, well, they actually they reference this in the documentary on.
Oh no! Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it's a pretty famous angle, because Ken Hoffman reported that Jake dropping the title and leaving, and because Watts wanted to protect the business and discredit Ken Hoffman, he had Jake the Snake go over here, even though this was like his final appearance in Houston.
Okay.
And he ends up dropping the title. I don't know if it was a phantom switch or if they did it at the TVs. But yeah, it was like Ford Roberts had the title for like 4 days.
Yeah, this was the TV title, right?
Yes.
Okay. You cared that much about the TV title.
And Bill Watts protected the business.
Of course. At the time, it wasn't even a belt, it was a medallion.
Yeah. And they threatened to kill this might have been for the North American title. I think Slater had the North American belt. Yeah.
Okay, because I'm so used to Slater having the TV title
around
this time. So yeah,
yeah,
I'm
I think
sorry.
The North American belt.
That makes all the difference. Okay, I'm sorry.
And Bill Watts like threatened to like, if you ever saw Ken Hoffman, he'd beat the crap out of him. Like there was like death threats to him and all that stuff. It was big time, and it's a famous folklore story. About how ridiculous Bill Watts would do anything to protect the business. And this is their blow-off.
I'm surprised he didn't call him a faggot on television.
Yeah, I know, right? this is the blow-off of a feud I really liked. And this is a no-DQ match. Jake taunts Slater to start, and Slater just starts kicking the crap out of him. Slater just taking it to Roberts. Jake's comeback is good with great-looking punches. The crowd's 100% behind him, but then Slater cuts him off and delivers some surgical punches of his own. The bout has a real sense of urgency, and the cape of these guys really comes off the screen. Jake is bleeding, and Slater delivers a pile driver, and Slater is after the cut. I'm loving this. Slater's biting the cut and has Jake's blood all over his mouth. It's freaking disgusting. The crowd is nuclear cheering on Jake. A quick cutoff. Comeback by Jake is cut off again immediately. I'm loving all these hope spots they're sprinkling in. And Slater's such a dick cutting him off. Slater, and he's back to the cut. Slater choking him with athletic tape. Because, again, this is an ODQ match. Jake with his boot making a comeback, which is also a callback to a couple of their matches that Jake would somehow the boot would come off and be using it. And here it's okay because it's an ODQ. So I really dug the callback to the other matches. Again, except this time it's legal. Nasty clothesline by Jake, but Slater turns the tide. Axe handle from the top, and Jake looks beat, but gets a foot on the rope. Atomic drop by Jake, and DDT into his own boot causes the roof to blow off the place, and he gets the win and the title. 4-star match, just a freaking visceral brawl. You know, not over the top where they needed all these bells and whistles. It was just hate-filled with good, strong storytelling. And you know what? It was awesome. They were playing to the crowd. They connected with the crowd. Shows again why Jake's such a great master of psychology, and Dick Slater was absolutely incredible here. What were your thoughts, man?
Well, first, I want to just clarify the finish a little, because it wasn't that he so much that he DDT'd him on the boot. It was that the boot comes into play, and I didn't know, as you said, that. You know, that there's a previous reference to the crowd, so that's awesome. And it gets to the point where what happens is Slater grabs the boot and Jake lets him grab the boot and stomps on his hand on the boot, so he's trapped, bent over, and then hits the DDT.
Oh, I missed that. That's even better.
Oh, wow. It's fucking tight as shit, bro. You know, I just went total Jersey Shore. It's amazing. The timing on this is
incredible.
Go back and watch it.
Like Jake sets up a trap and Dick Slater.
He sets up a trap. He's a snake, and he set a trap for Dick Slater, which is amazing because they're like, okay, you're going over tonight. I am. Yep, I'm like, I got an idea. And because, holy moly, it's so good. This is it's a bloody fight. It starts off, Jake is on the microphone, and he goes, hey, Slater, where's Dark Journey? And Slater runs in, and instead of the baby face getting the better on him, at first, Slater's kicking his ass because I guess he had DDT'd his girlfriend.
Yep.
And the realistic booking of that is whoever it is whose old lady got beat up by that guy. Okay, the guy whose old lady got beat up, and I say old lady because that's, you know, it's wrestling terminology and shit. And my dad's now. Is he's going to get always the advantage because the adrenaline is always more like, you don't touch my woman. And then just, you know, maybe 30 seconds later, then Jake makes a comeback. That's the timing and the psychology that works. Because if not, you're going to be like, well, fuck him. He beat up his old lady. You know, he got his licks in at least, and it makes him look tough. This match is wonderful. And you got, of course, people are throwing shit in the ring. And people get the announcers doing this whole thing. It's like, if you throw shit in this ring, you will be arrested. And it occurred to me, Pete, apparently no one's getting arrested because no one's stopping this behavior. No. They're just like, yeah, they don't arrest you. They just yell that shit. You know, Paul tells the announcer to yell that shit just for insurance reasons. Go ahead. He loves it when you throw shit, but just not all the time.
Yeah, I would safely say this is one of my favorite Jake the Snake Roberts matches.
You know? It's definitely one of my favorites that I've ever seen. Just in time for the whole recidivism of, you know, Jake Roberts is a shitty worker bullshit that I always hated to read.
I hated it too.
Yeah, and I was like, fuck you. I always hate that. I was a genius in the way, as a performer. It's like, no one performed like that, and this is him at his height. It's great stuff.
Yeah, that dude's had way too many great feuds. Mm-hmm. People think about it. Dick Slater, Ted DiBiase, Rick Rude, Ronnie Garvin, Ricky Savage, Ricky Steamboat. Those are just some of
them.
What?
Honky Tonk Man.
Honky Tonk, yeah, okay. His tag work is absolutely fantastic in Mid-South.
Him and World Class becoming a, like, Gino's partner, and they had some weird thing going, and they go to interview him at his home, and it's like a broken down trailer.
Yeah.
And junk in the yard, and he's got like a beaten up suit, and he's talking to the dude from World Class. Or the beard. No, it was a
David. I forget his name now.
Yeah, the other guy. Yeah. And he's like, well, you know, man.
Mark Lance.
I can't think of it either. I know you feel so ashamed that you can't think of that. But I'm offering you forgiveness. It's okay. But I know that's a Texas shame. But he goes, you know, man, it's just, it feels good to be on the winning team, you know, participating. And just behind him is like a junkyard dog and just diapers on the fucking lawn.
Yeah, and they had great, they had really good six-mans with Devon Erichs.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Bill Mercer. That's who it is.
Bill Mercer. Oh, yeah, you guys. Yeah, all's forgiven. All's forgiven.
I just couldn't think of it. Bill Mercer. Oh, that's embarrassing.
No, it's okay.
But, yeah, I mean, Jake is just a stud. That's all there is to it. Man, on that note, dude, do you have anything to plug besides it's your birthday? And people can send gifts?
Yeah, just send me a new hip. I spent 3 hours last night doing serious rehearsal of choreography for this number that I was like, this is going to be the most exercise I'm getting in a long time. And it was 3 hours straight of it. So, you know, was it GoFundMe? Is that the shit they use?
Yeah.
I'm going to be needing hip surgery. So let's get that running.
Get that ball rolling. All right, ball rolling. Follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week, fellas and gals, guys and gals, and we'll see you next week.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. Telecasts in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes. Look, I is my last hope. Chavo Guerrero, coming off the top rope. Red Shoes Dugan, holding his arm high, all out of breath. I hated all of Chavo's enemies. I would pray nightly for their death. Descending like fire on the people who deserved it most. Almost completely unknown outside of Texas and on the West Coast.